commencing countdown.
3, 2, 1.
This is The Contracting Experience.
Connecting government contracting professionals to the world around them through conversations with acquisition influencers, insights into evolving hot topics, and sharing lessons learned from the field.
Hello, podcast listeners, and welcome to another educational, informative, and entertaining episode of The Contracting Experience. You longtime listeners have likely already noticed that this is not the voice of the Contracting Experience podcast founder, developer, and longtime host, Ms. Amber Pecoraro. Amber established this podcast 5 years ago, hosting and published over 50 awesome episodes while amassing well over 120,000 downloads. As we wish Amber all the best as she takes over her new role in the Air Force Lifecycle Management Center, she certainly leaves behind a lasting legacy, and we're certainly grateful for the opportunity she's provided us all to keep connected to the world around us. But as they say in this business, the show must go on, so we're going to do our best to continue to build upon what Amber created and hopefully have her back as a guest at some point in the future. My name is Rob Lorton from the Contracting Digital Division at Headquarters AFMC, and in this episode of The Contracting Experience, I'm joined with Lieutenant Colonel Dan Finkenstadt from the Air Force Contracting Force Development Division. Lieutenant Colonel Finkenstadt is our leading authority on the use of artificial intelligence in Air Force contracting. Welcome, Lieutenant Colonel Finkenstadt. May I call you Fink?
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks.
All right, great. So Fink, first off, as a contracting guy, how did you become known as our leading authority on artificial intelligence for Air Force contracting?
Well, I would say I'm one of the folks that's applying it in test use cases in my own personal time the most. So I've played with it enough. And part of that is an outcropping of my previous job. Naval Postgraduate School. So when I was teaching out there, we were, we were on the .edu network versus the .mil. A lot of us using personal hardware and stuff. So we were able to do things that we can't really do currently with some of our constraints. So, and our job was to look into things like try them out. So as new technology started launching with November of 22, ChatGPT becomes a big deal. It really starts to pick up in January, February of 23. And so we jumped on that and started doing some projects related to it. So that's how I got involved. And I would say, I wouldn't call myself the leading authority on all AI and machine learning. I would say that right now in our workforce, I'm pretty heavily into the generative AI side of things. And we can talk about the differences, but there's definitely some other people that I won't name drop for their own good. They're probably better on the coding side of things and the expertise into like computer science. So.
Okay. No, that's great. Yeah. It's kind of a unicorn, right? Somebody who knows contracting and somebody who dabbles in this machine learning, artificial intelligence. So, you're one of the handful of folks, as you mentioned, that do that. And certainly the smartest guy I know. So we're happy to have you. And in my mind, you are our leading expert. So,
Good enough. Just
to sort of level set our audience on the conversation. Okay. The term artificial intelligence or AI, it's often misused or misunderstood, right? And it's often mistakenly used synonymously with terms like machine learning or bots or large language models. Can you kind of give us maybe a quick breakdown of the different capabilities there that people associate with AI?
Yeah, so AI is definitely a touchy subject. And if you get into the computer science groups, they'll get really upset when you claim something's AI and it's not. But there is definitely a large group of folks who in computer science and elsewhere who sort of see it as a broad field that is any technology that's sort of able to perform tasks typically requiring human intelligence, like reasoning, learning, perception, problem solving, understanding language. It's to help machines execute tasks intelligently. And machine learning is kind of a subset of that, right? And so it's, can the machine actually update itself or learn based on data? Can it see patterns? Can it make decisions with minimal human intervention? And the goal there is to kind of learn from and make predictions from data. And so we can talk about that, but I have a briefing I give where there's sort of these four ranges of where big AI exists, which is sort of in the possibility space, the process improvement space, the probability space and then like precision estimate space, right? And so machine learning actually is all of that, which is machine learning actually informs things like generative AI. But the use case for generative AI is mainly in the possibility space. And we'll talk about what I mean by that. Whereas like niche, specially trained machine learning models that have very, very good data that are built for very, very strict use cases for prediction or precision estimation are a different animal. But it all sort of fits under this big umbrella of AI, which all sort of sits under this big umbrella of digital transformation, which is the conversation we keep hearing about, but people just keep mixing the two. And then bots themselves, it's also getting convoluted because on the bot side, that's basically just like some automation from coding in a traditional sense. And why you see bots being sort of proliferated a little bit faster than generative AI, because it's a little bit more understood. However, I will say that is getting muddied because a lot of these bots and stuff are incorporating LLMs into them and LLMs are incorporating bots. So, if that makes sense, right? Which is you can use the bot to go off and grab the data that you need, but then the LLM has sort of a generative interpretation of the data, if that makes sense.
We keep hearing of all this capability from industry, right? I've been to a lot of road shows. I've been to a lot of presentations. Industry is doing some amazing stuff with this. But then we keep hearing on our networks, AI isn't authorized for use, or, well, yeah, but really be careful with it. Do you have, what's the real story there?
Well, so it depends. So AI, again, is it's not that it's not authorized for use. It's the generative AI, the large language models primarily. So there's a whole policy on just large language models. So let's talk about that. Within AI, we talked about we've got these strict machine learning models, which have been developed. I'm sure there's been plenty of them developed out of AFIT and other places for specific use cases. You've got the MIT accelerator, which is working on stuff that is primarily focused on the, let's call it the pointy end of the spear. It's not really worried about business systems and business processes and supply chain processes where we exist. But like those things are being built and cleared and going through their processes, absent the restrictions that you're hearing about. The restrictions that you're hearing about mainly are the large language models, which are a subset of generative AI models, which basically just predict is all it's doing. The next best set of words given a previous set of words, if that makes sense, right? But it sounds very conversational and it's at a level of abstraction that and multidimensionality where it comes across as it can actually synthesize information, interpret, and do things that even the builders of it weren't quite sure that it could do. So those models are like your GPT models, things like Llama, Claude, it used to be Bard, now it's called Gemini from Google. So those types of models are prohibited. There is a list that's posted. We have it on the Air Force Contracting Central page, but it's also on SAFCN, the CIO page, that list what is available for use. And the only three things that are out there right now are basically saying, don't use Ask Sage. And that's one that needs to go out there. I'm not saying we'll never approve Ask Sage. I'm saying right now it's saying explicitly, don't use it. A company named Scale AI has built a platform called Donovan. And Donovan is authorized for use, I think, up through like aisle 5, working on aisle 6. I don't remember if there's still an aisle 5 and aisle 6, but it's definitely at the nipper and sipper level. And that one is not a model. That is a platform, which is using a Llama model. Llama is built by Meta, and Llama's models are available for download onto our own hardware. So it's not going into a cloud processing situation. So nothing right now is authorized that I'm aware of that you can use cloud for. And then there is another like strict use case. It doesn't really have anything to do with our world. That's a model that's approved on there. I do know of people who are working with that large language model team at SAFCN and trying to get, you know, approval to use them if they can get through the authority to operate process, which is a very long, expensive, drawn out process. There are other avenues out there. So at the DoD level, we have Tradewinds, which is supposed to help folks get to that place. But right now, I am not aware of anything that's being used on network and authorized for use on hardware other than those specific use cases listed on the website for SAFCN.
Okay, right. And I think a lot about what I'm hearing about is maybe Cyber 1, Cyber 2 level stuff where the contractor is going out and they're using AI, large language models, but they're doing it kind of on their own, you know, their own network, right? They're not.
Yeah, and we can do that sort of thing. That's fine. But honestly, a lot of the open source models, like I can go do it on my personal computer and do quite a bit of that stuff already without needing a Sibber. I'm not trying to knock Sibber. I'm just saying, like, if Sibber wants to add value, in my mind, it's like we need to have a strong process where they're building in an environment that will make it ATO ready or close to ATO ready. So make sure it's using like Azure or one of those cloud-based platforms for building so that we know that it can actually get ATO so that there's a text transfer plan because it'll frustrate both sides, right? Like if we build something really cool that we can never get over to the user, then the government's frustrated. And then obviously the contractor's frustrated because they never realized something passed the phase two. And so I think those are some of the things we've got to be making sure we're working on. Another thing is, you know, we've got to try, in my opinion, we've got to try to avoid a spray and pray approach to this AI thing, which is like, let's just let, you know, 1,000 flowers bloom. And it's like, well, you can do that, but you can also like overwhelm your garden and nobody can figure out what it looks like. Right. And so that's really what I'm concerned about. The spray and pray, let 1,000 flowers bloom process has not been super helpful in a lot of areas, in my personal opinion. I'm not saying you don't approach that, but there needs to be somebody managing the strategy for what we're going to do. And step one, it's not exciting, it's not sexy, it's process mapping, right? If you don't understand your process from end to end, what is it we do? What is our business every day? And what are the attributes of that business environment and the way that we interact? Do we want to change it, make it more efficient, make it more automated, you know, enhance its capability? All those things that AI can help with, we have to systematically think about every step in the process, every channel, you know, network channel along the way. Where do we want to do that? And what is our strategy to do it? Because it all comes at a cost of manpower, time, and money, especially if we're worried about security and we want to pay to manage our own hardware and compute. That gets really expensive. So.
Do you envision a strategy like that coming out in the near future or distant future?
We've got a lot of like nibbling the edges type stuff right now. So it's in the works. There's definitely a team that's looking at digital transformation. And I honestly would prefer that the strategy not come out of an AI ML group. It would come out of a digital transformation group so that it's sort of the broad look and go, hey, where do we just need pure automation? You know, where do we just need to like put stuff on a cloud, you know, all that. And then going like, okay, where do we need to do this improvement? And then introduce AI ML as a mechanism for enhancing your digital transformation strategy. Because we also have to have, in addition to the digital transformation strategy, you have to have a data literacy strategy and a digital literacy strategy. And I don't know that everyone knows those are different, but they are. So simple terms, digital literacy is, you know, I can use ChatGPT, right? I know how to use web-based platforms. Data literacy is I can actually interpret statistics or I can look at a price distribution and tell you like what's going on and like think of ways to visualize that data to tell a story, right? So I'm data literate or I'm digital literate. Hopefully you're both, not one or the other. I think you can be one or the other, but they really, really complement each other nicely if you're both. So it should be a goal to increase digital literacy, data literacy within the workforce, and then look at systematic ways to process map. I do know we did a lot of that work as part of our research at MPS on behalf of the Air Force. So it is being done at some level. It's just, I don't know that we've got that set across, you know, from DAF down. And part of that is like, it's one of those things where we could do that at the AQC level. And again, this is Fink talking, not any official stance of anybody, but we really have to know the DAF's digital transformation strategy. Because if we work outside of that, we can really get caught sideways, right? Case in point, I talk to people almost on the daily that are doing some kind of either Sibber or idea of using a large language model for something. And so many of them don't even know that we have a policy on that, right? So like that's just at our own, you know, explicit, like that one use case. But imagine across all forms of digital transformation against all phases of our acquisition work process, right? It can get hairy. So I think it's just, you know, it's a matter of not being afraid to use these technologies because we'll get run over if we don't use them. But we've got to have a process in place for discerning what we're going to invest in and where. And you know, with these grassroots efforts, I worry about scattering resources, scattering competence, and upsetting the industrial base, because they're not realizing the fruits of their labor that they think they're going to realize. So and that's not that's not the fault of the people that are running those programs. Again, if you don't have an overarching strategy that you can go look up to and say, hey, I'm working directly in line with that, then you just have to sort of work off of what you think is a good idea. And so that's the biggest risk I see is not an overarching digital transformation strategy that feeds an AI ML strategy. This should be working in complement to a data management strategy.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense, because right now I think we're all kind of seeing it. It's kind of, everybody's doing their own thing, because, quite frankly, it's fun, right? It's fun to build these models. It's fun to play with. But again, a lot of folks, maybe we're getting ahead of our skis a little bit because, we aren't quite sure what that synergy looks like.
Well, there's so much stuff that people are nervous about putting cost and pricing data into ChatGPT, and you should be, because there's some early indications, and I don't want to say something that I haven't physically seen the proof of, but I've had anecdotal stories from industry that said we've got people that we know that have put their pricing rates into GPT, and those were discoverable later on the internet. Now, I don't know if that's true. I'd have to see how that actually works out. But I know that that's a worry, is securing that kind of proprietary information. But we always seem to go to these extreme corner cases when we're trying to justify or validate whether we want to try a new technology, right? So it's like, oh, we can't put in our proprietary cost and pricing data. And it's like, okay, well, there's a host of other things that we do that are hugely time consuming that aren't secret sauce.
Yep. Do you have any advice for some of us that might be tempted to use ChatGPT or another large language model for things like preparing our self-assessments or appraisals or award packages? Any thoughts on that? I know it's got to be tempting for folks.
No, it's definitely tempting, and I personally don't have a problem with it. Do not put anyone's PII in the information in there. Do not say, Rob Lorton did this on this date. I don't think we're cleared for that. I don't think, even if you're using your personal computer, I do think you can say, I have an employee who did this, that, and the other, as long as it's not a CUI bit of information. And there's no PII in it, I think it's fine. And then just to go in and say, you can literally tell the large language model to say, insert name, put it in brackets, so you know everywhere that you need to go, take the Word doc and say, Control F, replace insert name with Rob Lorton, right? So you can do that, right? But if you're gonna do those things, you also, again, you can use it to chainsaw your bear, but you're gonna have to go in there with a chisel and make sure that it doesn't read like AI on everything. Ways you can do that. You can go in and give it good examples of previous writings, again, removing the PII or any CUI plus information, and say, hey, this is a good example of a performance statement. I would like you to help me do that. You can also upload, the tongue and quill or something like that, if you want it to follow a format, and have it follow that and to write those. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. You can look for words that are what they consider highlights that AI was used, because that will get old and people will start picking up on it. If you say Rob aims to, or Rob delved into, those are sort of two of the big words that are always used by AI, unless you tell it not to. It always talks about delving and aiming, which is super frustrating. And there's a few others. There's actually, if you look out there, if you Google, it's like the seven key phrases that indicate AI. And there's a couple other people who posted key phrases, but they're all pretty similar. It's pretty good at saying yeah, you're right. If I read enough of these, I can kind of tell. And we also, AI does this thing when you build text, it sort of defaults to the professional military education briefing format. By that, what I mean is it'll always be like, here's what I'm about to tell you. And it'll tell you something, goes, here's what I just told you, right? In summary, right? So it does sort of the CGO briefing model. And that's, it's just naturally built that way. You have to tell it not to. So it's a clear, if you use it enough, you can kind of read stuff and go yeah, this is definitely AI generated, right? But I think it's also okay to do stuff and say hey, I used AI as a copy editor, right? We use people as copy editors, right? We use spell check. All these things that we've gotten our mind around that somehow with AI, because of how much it wordsmiths stuff, we feel like it's unfair or it's not transparent. I don't think that's true, right? I think using spell check doesn't mean you're a good speller, right? In fact, it can make you a worse speller, but it doesn't matter, because you don't need to be a good speller if you have spell check. So, some of those non-value-added processes, it overcomes, and we just need to be comfortable with that. That's, again, Fink's opinion. But I think for the appraisal side, I mean, I have done that. I actually have a GPT that I built that writes performance narratives for your appraisals. And
let's help the machines work with us. But again, I think the caveat is don't expect the machine to work for you. Right. You still need that domain knowledge to give it a good sanity check and put your own flavor on it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And you articulate between two concepts. Right. So like most people keep talking about, oh, we need human in the loop. We need human in the loop. Right. Well, there's another concept that's out there that no one ever talks about called machine in the loop, which is like actually the human's still going to drive the whole thing. They're just going to use the machine to enhance what they're doing. Right. And generative AI provides for a lot of space for machine in the loop, which is like, I'm going to do what I always do, but I'm going to inject some AI as I go. You know, I mean, there's just things that we do all the time that just suck the life out of our you know, our day that are useful. They are useful, but it's still good to go. Like, for instance, like if you got the new National Defense Industrial Strategy, right? And you're like, all right, that's a new strategy. And I've got this initiative that I'm doing that kind of feels to me like they're similar. Like, I feel like what I'm doing in my job is supporting the NDIS. And I'm being asked by my boss, how am I doing things to support national defense? Well, I can just drop the NDIS in there and tell them what I do on a daily basis in a secure manner, right? Not in some CUI plus manner. And it'll do the synthesis for you line by line, right? Like, why should I spend days figuring that out when it can just do it for me, right? Now you got to go validate and make sure that, like, is that actually, you know, do some control effing in the NDIS. is that actually in there? You know, so what I tend to do is I'll actually review a document, scan it, and you sometimes read it front to back, and then I'll go, okay, I know what's in here, and I know it attaches to these other things I'm doing, but I don't want to spend the time 2 hours wordsmithing. I'm just going to have it make the linkages. And then I'll know what right looks like. What is not okay, and it will screw up with, if you're not careful, is just throwing a document in there and being like, tell me what's in here, and then using that to go off and spout out what's in there. Because it can get some stuff, it can mix some things up sometimes, right? It's not always perfect, especially depending on the format of the document. Like, it does really well with Word and text files. It's getting really good with PDFs, but if the PDFs use like figures, like Venn diagrams and tables and stuff versus just straight text, it has a harder time pulling on that. And especially when you start asking it to pull numbers from documents, it can get really confused. So you got to be aware of what you're doing while you're using it. But again, you know, telling everybody to sit back and wait until we figure out a way to train them all is not the best plan either. I think there's definitely a lot of goodness in saying, like, you know, try all the cool, secure, you know, safe things that you can on your personal time and computer. And then we can think about, like, what's the right thing to do for that in a virtual space? Like, should we be investing in enterprise or team-based tools for this to work on some of these lower risk areas, right? And start binning things that are low risk that we can go, like, you know what, we're okay with that.
Yeah. No. Great. Great stuff.
Yeah, I think we'll be positioned on that. Sorry, for contracting, we're thinking through that, but we're gonna need SAFCN to say, like, all right, you're now authorized to like determine your own risk structure for using these things. You know.
Yeah, and I think that's the warm fuzzy folks are waiting on, right? Where's the clear direction or prohibitions thereof? But I think a big question our listeners are probably interested in, one I hear quite a bit, is when can we expect to see Air Force contracting take advantage of some of these technological advancements, like in ConIT, maybe KT file shares, a couple examples? Yeah. Any thoughts on that, or what's your crystal ball thinking?
Well, on the ConIT side, I would say not anytime soon that I'm aware of. With like direct in the system ConIT. I don't know, and I don't want to speak for them, because that's a team that's working really hard to do really good things with what is in the digital transformation space, right? And you know, I don't know how quick and easy it would be to at least point users to other tools out of ConIT versus just embedding it in ConIT. You know, again, we've got to keep things under control, because, like, you know, I remember PMRT coming out, and, you know, it's such a good system and such a good idea, but the proliferation of app development has made it a little bit of a dumpster fire and for trying to figure out what you're doing. So, you know, that's what I don't want to happen in this space. KT file share, I'm not really certain. I will tell you, there's, again, stuff around the edges, right? So, like, I know out in Japan, the cons out there are using it just for, like, you know, translation services. Right. That's a joint effort with the Navy, but they're getting approval to use these sort of
language translators for that. So just imagine how much easier that makes life in a space where you have to translate your documents. So that's a simple use case. I know that the folks down at Eglin have a large contract. I think it's called Ewoks, but they're using a portal that is going to allow them to use large language models for developing requirement statements all the way through solicitation documents, right? So all the pre-award to award phase stuff, absent the evaluation itself, but they're kind of going that far with it. And they're building it uniquely to the use case for their contract, which is a very large contract, but they're building in workflow capability to where any user can do it. Now, again, everything I'm hearing is like, you know, we're doing these cool things just pending ATO, just, you know, authority to operate, right? And it's like, well, that's not like a small thing, you know, like everybody's pending ATO, right? So that's what I would say is I cannot tell you that. I know on the industry side, when I talk to people about the ATO process, it's like, you know, the most miserable experience of their life. So I haven't gone through that. So I don't want to opine too much on it other than just saying that it's something that I've heard more than one person say, like, hey, when we're doing these cool what if projects and looking to build stuff, let's at least build them in approved cloud environments that we know will be faster for getting ATO, just to help with tech transfer, because we do research and we do SIBRs and we do stuff like that, but tech transfer should not be an afterthought, right? It's got to be part of the build environment. So got to be baked in. So just that saying, I don't really know when anything's going to go mainstream as terms of like, here's your approved, you know, DAF tool for AI use. We're still trying to get approval. I know. So Tradewinds is at the DoD level and it has three contracts, right? So if you're not familiar with Tradewinds, it's the CDAO, DoD CDAO, not the Air Force's AI acquisition sort of central hub. And they've got a CSO out there for TriAI, which is just a, you know, commercial solutions opening to try to see about merit-based use cases of models for federal contracting agreements. So for, you know, for different things. So both like use cases in contracting and acquiring AI. Then they've got a test and evaluation BPA. So you can go out there and actually do some T&E and at least get that part of the process completed. And then they've got this thing called DRAID, D-R-A-I-D, which is the Data Readiness for Artificial Intelligence Development, BOA. So basic ordering agreement. And that's where you can go out and get folks to come in and try to prepare your data for an AI use case and like help you get your data in shape. So those are the three things I'm aware of. I know that SAF CN has talked about building an AI observatory, and I'm going to meet with them tomorrow and get some more details because I don't quite understand how that's different than the Tradewinds test and evaluation BPA. It sounds very similar because what it is it was going to be this place where we could go out with a small amount of money and our use case for every contracting need and at least get through the test and evaluation stage so that when we got the okay to start using large language models on our networks, we could move with them. There is a model that's been out of AFRL called Nipper GPT, Project Sabre, I think is what it's called. But to be quite honest with you, it's been down since like January. And it's some security concerns there is from what I understand. And not that anything was like happened. I think they just started thinking about it and said like, we should pause X for a minute. And so, I don't know the status of where it's at. I check every day and it has not come back online. It was supposed to be back online in February. It's still not. And that was just having access to a GPT model. And then Scale AI's Donovan platform, again, I think that is one that we could look at and say like, hey, do we want to talk to these folks because it is approved for use? Is there a use case we want to go after? But look, all this takes money, time, compute power. So we can't say, hey, I want you to do end-to-end, you know, large language model support for everything in the contract management process, right? We probably have to get a sit down and talk about what that cost looks like across a workforce of, you know, however many, what do we have, like 8,000 people or whatever, right? And they're just using it day in and day out, you know, how do we manage that? Because that costs money to use those models. So,
right, sure. Let me give you a chance to plug your line of effort here. The DAF contracting flight plan was released last month. There are a couple initiatives dealing with digital tools and artificial intelligence within the flight plan. In fact, you're leading a team under Mr. Braswell's line of effort one to foster AI education and training across the contracting workforce. Can you share the objectives of your team? Maybe give us some insight on what we can expect there?
Yeah. So right now, what we're trying to do is two things. One is educate. So we're building materials to go out there and let the workforce know about what is the most current information we have on applications and policy. Right. We also do some education on just basics. Right. So we have some lessons out on Air Force Contracting Central. If you go out to the main page and click on the artificial intelligence link, it'll take you there. And there'll be a training on basics of AI and ML at a very layman level, research that we know in that area, and then applications that we're aware of. And then there's some information there on policy, too. So that's just sort of the information piece of it. But as we go through that process, the other objective is to sort of herd the cats, right, and wrangle in and figure out, like, who's doing what where, and how do we put some structure to that. Again, that's not really our job to direct how that goes, but we can at least give people a picture of what the, you know, I hate this term so much, but the ecosystem looks like, you know, like, what does it actually look like? Such an overused word, but that's really what it is, right? It's like a complex network of people moving it, you know, from grassroots to, you know, mid-level to senior level, everybody's doing things. And so trying to figure out who's doing what and is everyone aware? It's seen some, you know, we've got a lot of positive feedback on the training side of things, which is good. And we've actually had more than one person, you know, start moving out on an effort. And just by having contact with us to know the policy, they were able to avoid getting burned, you know. So like the language went out in Asia, right? Like that was one that didn't know it needed to coordinate with SAFCN, but we told them, and it was like within a few days they were cleared to go, right? So with what they were doing, because it didn't violate any of the other rules, but they knew they were clear. So I think that's sort of what we're trying to be, is mainly the education piece. And as we educate, it's also being a central place of knowing, like, who's doing what. I have a good team that's helping me, a couple ladies from AQCP, from the policy staff, Corey McNabb and Amanda Rossi. And then I got a couple captains who were some of my students that did AI research at Naval Postgraduate School. So Chad Hedgepeth and Ryan Tagadik, they're both supporting our team as well with just sort of figuring out what's going on out there.
All right. So say we have you know, an innovative and creative contracting workforce out there. A lot of folks are interested in this AI world. They want to get into it. They want to do something with it. Where could they start? And maybe let me put a plug in the AI Phantom program at MIT. Are you familiar at all with that program?
Yeah, I am. So again, the AI Phantom program, loosely familiar, but I do know that from talking to folks and looking at what they do, it's I think it would be really an interesting experience for folks to get into, to understand artificial intelligence at a higher level. The business case, like, for, you know, the using it for business systems, I haven't really seen that be the focus of that group. They do have a group that's working on using them for education. So I think that benefits everybody. But, you know, just learning the differences in the models and the applications and thinking about how they could do it. You know, the other option is like, just, you know, could we start talking to that group and saying, like, hey, would you start working on some business use cases? Right. But yeah, I mean, it seems like a strong program for learning about AI. I don't know that it's directly tied to what we're talking about currently, but it doesn't mean it can't be. So that's, you know, and again, I want to say, like, generative AI is kind of its own animal, and the way it behaves and the way it works and the security concerns are different than just like these explicit machine learning models that are built for targeting or, you know, optimal ordering of supplies and stuff like that. So, or, you know, scheduling out sorties and stuff like that. So, like, I think it's all within the big umbrella of AI, but it is different. And I don't know that the Phantom program's looking at those yet. I'm not saying they won't. I don't talk to them every day. But yeah, that's one thing that I think it's value added. If you've got good ideas for a business use case, I would say go to our website and see what's already out there in terms of like applications. I would say if you're aware of somebody who's actually actively putting money towards something to build something that supports us, let us know. There have been, there's been at least one congressional request to figure out who's doing what in business systems and logistics. And so we fall under that. So it'd be good to know of anybody who's off building something, you know, if, you know, how things work. Sometimes, like, it's supports contracting, but it's being built by, you know, whoever, you know, AETC or something, or ACC, and we won't even know about it until later. So, you know, if you can bubble that up, that's hugely helpful, especially so we can help make sure you're
coordinated, and then we can cross-pollinate the information so other people can use whatever the cool stuff is that people are building.
Okay. And where would they report that? You say that's on Air Force Contracting Central?
Yeah. So if you go on Air Force Contracting Central over on the right and slide down, there's sort of those little like that little menu of different subpages. There's just an artificial intelligence subpage. And so there's a chat at the bottom. You can put in information. You can email me direct. There might be one other Finkenstat in there in the Air Force. I think there's a Chris, but I'm the only Dan. So you can definitely email me direct. And then reach out to Amanda Rossi or Corey McNabb, Corey with a K. They're on the policy staff and help update the page.
Okay, no, that's awesome. I think that's a great takeaway for our listeners. I'll put that in the show notes there and post it with the podcast. I think that's a great one, giving folks at least, you know, a place to go for some authoritative, maybe some collaboration insight there. So no, this has been awesome. Great discussion on AI. I've certainly learned a lot. I'm sure our listeners have as well. And any parting thoughts or any questions you wished I would have asked you? Anything else our listeners need to know?
Yeah, I mean, so the one thing I would say, and this is for everyone, even though it does sound like it has like a leadership focus, it really is for everyone who's thinking about how to institute AI, because we are excited about it. We do want to do it, but there, you know, if you're going to build a strategy for something like this and you don't go off in the shotgun approach, there's sort of these key questions that we need to ask ourselves. And this, again, step one is understanding your processes really well and your dependencies. But, you know, ask yourself, could we, should we, would we, if we, right? Which is like, could we do it? Is it technically feasible? Is it validatable? You know, should we? Then we get into like, okay, it's technically feasible. Is it ethically in society, you know, and it's sound for like, is there an ethical concern with using it this way? Or should we adapt how we're going to use it based on ethical concerns? You know, the would we gets at, you know, is this in alignment with our values to rely on AI in this way and to change our processes, right? And I think that's anytime you're going to bring in a new tool or change the way you do business, you kind of go through this process. And then the if we piece is like, okay, we've kind of gotten through all three of those. We know we want to do it. Now we got to start thinking through some of the blocking and tackling stuff, like, all right, how do we manage it over the life cycle? You know, how do we manage our workforce for change? How do we do continuous improvement? How do we deal with trust and transparency, IP, data rights, all that? Anyway, my point being is those four questions are broad enough to get you started, but specific enough to like keep you on target, I guess. So it's just some things that, again, I would say is, if you key takeaway for anyone trying to develop an AI plan is, could we, should we, would we, if we? And within if we is the question, what if we don't? Right? What's the counterfactual? What if we don't do this? Are we going to lose capability? Are we going to lose value? Are we going to leave opportunity on the table or put risk into the system by simply not using it, right? And so first step is education and learning. That's why our KR is here. Try to make sure we're informed, and then we can make smart risk-based decisions.
All right, folks, that's Lieutenant Colonel Dan Finkenstat, a discussion of AI. Thank you for joining the Contracting Experience podcast. We will see you in the next episode.